Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Our guest today is the godfather of the fly sweep offense, Coach Mark Speckman. Coach Speckman is currently the offensive coordinator at Lawrence University in Appleton, Wisconsin. Coach Speckman, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on.
Coach, let's get into things and go back to the beginning of your career. What made you want to be a football coach?
You know, I had a I was a typical, you know, knucklehead. I just kind of wanted to play college football, and I went to a junior college, and they told me to take these classes and I could play, and I took them, and then I transferred to Azusa Pacific University, and they told me to take classes, and then about my end of my junior year, they told me I'd have a major, and I asked them what I could do the fastest, and they said get an education, and so that's kind of what I got into, and really liked the teaching part of it, but always liked the, you know, you had to coach in those days to get a job because it was so competitive. There were no jobs. And so I coached baseball, soccer, football, and really enjoyed the football part of it more than the teaching. And so I did. I just kind of fell into it and was I also had some great high school coaches and college coaches that were great mentors to me. And I really respected those coaches and really thought they had a neat lifestyle and really wanted to emulate that.
So you've become the godfather of the fly offense. Tell us a little bit about how the fly offense came about and where you learned that.
You know, it's I've never said I invented the fly, but I do think I take credit for developing it into an offensive scheme. But I learned it from Phil Moss and Roger Sugimoto. They came from Coachella Valley High School in California to North Monterey County High School, and I was 23 years old. And it's kind of a crazy story, but it was a brand new high school. The first year they suspended the coach, and I, in my first year of coaching, became the head varsity coach and head frost off coach. And of course, we just got our brains beat out, and we had no seniors, and it was a bad deal. And they hired Phil Moss and Roger to come in, and they put in the fly. And we really were a veer team, but they had this four-play series. And when they drew it up on the board, I saw the guy going sideways. I said, you can't do that. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me. But it was kind of we always had more success with that four-play series than we did with the veer. And so when I became a head coach in 1981 at Livingston High School, I brought that veer offense with the fly and quickly jettisoned the veer and just kept coming up with different ways to run the fly and different formations and been doing that ever since.
How much has that evolved over time to where it is today? I think I first came across it in the late 90s, and I reached out to you and you sent me a VHS tape, which I certainly appreciate. And at the time it was a little bit more under center, kind of more of an eye formation based, with an offset back. How much has that evolved for you with the advent of RPOs and no huddle and all right. Those types of things?
Right. You know, a lot of times, you know, I'll talk to an ex-player and they'll say, hey, you still run the fly, coach? And I always tell them, you know, if you step in the huddle, it'd be really familiar to you, and then it would be really different. And so, it's still the basic stuff. We still line up in our two back with our quarterback behind center, because I think there's just some great, great features in that. But we also are heavy into the gun have really worked to perfect the gun fly and the behind center fly, so it's seamless and incorporated options or RPOs. Or the beauty of the fly offense is it can morph into whatever it is you're good at, you run and shoot or whatever, based on your talent. And that was what really attracted me to it all over the years.
So you've become known for the offense, but any great team, and you've had some great teams, you went on to have three playoff teams at Willamette University. Any great team has a coach who knows how to build a culture within the team. So what are some of the things you've done over your career, your different stops, to build culture?
You know, that's a great question. You know, that whole culture thing is kind of, you know, you could give a clinic talk on building culture and, you might draw three people. And, you know, it's just not the most popular topic, but it's really the mortar and that holds everything together. Early on, you know, I kind of came to the conclusion, you know, we don't work football, we play football. And kids want to do something positive, and they want to do something fun. They want to do something that they feel a part of. You know, nobody wants to be berated all day long or run into somebody bigger than you all day long. And so early on, we tried to be disciplined. I used to call it a velvet covered brick. You wanted the kids to feel good about being there, but they, you know, especially in high school, you really had to discipline them. And you know, at the high school I was at, they needed a lot of discipline. And, but you had to do, you know, try to make it fun and come up with fun ways to stretch or just traditions. And so we kind of always had these crazy little things we did during stretching you know, then in college, you have so much time with them in fall camp. You know, we really worked hard on having specific daily team building activities. It could be something as simple as a water balloon toss. It could be something where they write a letter to their parents, where they it just goes on and on. And we would plan that just like we planned our special teams. I mean, on our practice plan, our daily schedule, there was a team building time built in so that we wouldn't forget it, because that's usually the first thing that gets jettisoned. And you know, and so we've done things like have books for the kids that's a theme for the year. The whole team building thing, that's just something that to me is really a creative deal, and you don't pay attention to it at your own peril, in my opinion.
A lot of coaches seem to be paying attention to it now. It's been something that's at the forefront, probably with Urban Meyer's book, Above the Line. Have you had a chance to read that book?
I have not read that book, but I will.
Yeah, I've been surprised, Coach, how many guys have brought that book up as one they recommend. So I have to get to it as well. But culture being, you know, a key part really of what he points to, and obviously they have an excellent offense and defense. But, you know, I think what do you do? You know, the idea is what do you do to get to a championship level? And I think it's what you said. It's the culture. So I don't know if today I think you'd get more than three people. You know, at least five would come and listen to a culture.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think we start to understand as older coaches, and I don't know if you agree with this or not, that maybe our X's and O's are overrated, and, you know, it's a lot more to do with our philosophy and our program and our principles that provide consistency to our program.
Well, there's no doubt, you know, and you know, I mean, you could have the best schemes in the world, and if the kids are fighting each other or don't like each other or don't respect each other or don't respect the coaches, or, you know, I really think you need to really teach kids how to act and model how to act. I think a lot of times we assume they know how to travel on the bus, or we assume they know how to talk to each other after a loss, or we assume they know, you know, how to handle competition in practice when one side wins and one side loses. And I think you just got to, you know, you got to be almost, you have to have a laser focus on those types of things. There's a lot of teachable moments. And one of the best things I learned when there was a problem was, you know, not to say, oh no, but to say, hey, this is a great opportunity to improve. And as coaches and as a team, and, you know, all those things are just great teaching moments. And I found that when I approached it like that, I didn't get as mad, and the kids usually bounce back faster.
Coach, let's flip to some of that offense of yours and focus on that a little bit. What are some of the key tenets that make up the philosophy behind your offense?
You know, first and foremost, you know, we're going to run the sweep. And, you know, we have that's our base play. We have several ways of running it, but, you know, I talk to our kids all the time about we're going to beat them with the sweep, or we're going to beat them with the sweep. And you know, the whole thing is, they either will run it and they can stop it, or they'll stop it and then we can do something else. And so I think any good offensive system's got – a base play with many things off it that make it tough for the defense. But first and foremost, we want to be a perimeter run team.
Okay. And then off of the perimeter run, how important is, for example, getting your inside run or your passing game involved?
You know, to me, you know, a lot of people say balance is 50-50. And to me, balance is 33-33-33. I mean, if we can run up the middle 33% of the time, we can throw it 33% of the time, and we can sweep 33% of the time, that would be an awesome game for us. The reality is that you never really hit those numbers. But, you know, what I learned in high school and in Division III is you don't always get exactly the players you want for an offensive scheme. You may not have a thrower, or you may have a big, tall, slow quarterback that's got a great arm, but he can't run. And you may have a big line that can zone block, or but maybe you got some guys that can't, and you're undersized, or maybe you got a great receiver, maybe you don't. So, you know, to me, you have to be – I never wanted to have an offensive system where if the quarterback got hurt, you might as well get on the bus. Or, you know, you didn't have some big linemen, you couldn't run it. And because every year the pieces change a little bit. And, you know, obviously at the higher levels, you can go get a guy that looked just like the guy that graduated. And, you know, you can keep schemes a little bit more static. But what I like about what we do is sometimes we are really good at throwing the ball and really good at sweeping, and we're not so good up the middle. And sometimes we're really good up the middle and we're really good at sweeping, and we can't throw a lick. And every year is a little bit, you know, it's a little bit different, but we do have a very, you know, a very sound passing game, play action, and we try to put in some run and shoot principles. It's kind of our base stuff. And, you know, our inside run game is more, you know, trapping, pinning and pulling. We're not a big zone team because we just frankly haven't had that kind of line very often. And then our perimeter game is pretty consistent. I mean, we're going to run, you know, our sweeps as many ways as we can. And so I don't know if that's kind of, you know, the older you get, the longer your answers get.
Right.
When I was young, I'd tell you exactly how it was. But now I'm going, well, you know, it's a little different. But I think, you know, we kind of have a play for each gap in our offense, and the trick is to find which gap is the least defended.
Now, back, if I remember correctly, when I learned this from your video series, it was red light, yellow light, green light sweeps. Are you still using those concepts?
Absolutely. And you know, I stole some perimeter numbering systems from a Veer clinic I was at somewhere, and was actually waiting for my coaches to come so we could go have dinner. And I was in the back of the room. The guy started talking about this, and I've used it ever since. So it was fortuitous. But, you know, the whole idea on the sweep is, you know, a lot of people think with this fly sweep, you're just going to run outside. And that's how I started. You know, we just all ran outside. And then sometimes, you know, we against the good teams, the defensive end would be, you know, keeping leverage on our tackle, and you know, the outside backer kept leverage on our tight end, and we'd all run out of bounds together. And I'd stop the film. I said, is there any way we can hit that 15-yard gash between, you know, the hash mark and the sideline that's undefended? And so that's kind of how we came up with the yellow light. We started to read our tight end's block or the slot receiver's block. And then red light, just, you know, so many people were playing outside of us to keep our sweep, is that there was just a natural cut-up lane. And so we kind of have a system where green light means we're going outside unless we can't, and yellow means we're going to read it, and then red means it's designed to cut up. And to me, I think, you know, to be a good fly team, you got to run two of the three. If you can run all three, I think you got a real shot at being good.
So obviously the sweep is your go-to play, and you have the different types that you run. You're going to run that maybe 15 to 20 times a game. And I know, you know, you're running back. You coach those guys up very distinctly. And I remember hearing a clinic talk and listen to a guy say, you got the tail back, and if he can't do it, you get the next guy in there. So, I mean, if you're fortunate enough to have those guys, you can exist that right. way. But, for you, what are the key points for that running back that you teach him to be able to be successful on your sweep play?
Well, the sweeper has got to, and we call him the sweeper. Anytime a guy's running a sweep, he's a sweeper. And the key thing, there's a couple of things, but, and I think one of the things that kind of was an aha moment for me, and I can't remember, I think it was in the late 90s. It was at Willamette. I remember that. But, was being able to time the sweep really well from behind center and really well from the shotgun. And so to me, there's a little bit of a difference on how you do that, but regardless of whether you're behind center or if you're in the shotgun, we really teach the lead back to take what we call a J step. So if it's red, he's going to take a small J step. And if it's green, he's going to take a big J step, and the big steps on his J, he's going to make the letter J. And if it's yellow, he's going to J step and read the appropriate blocker. But the key is to get that sweeper on his outside hip. And if you go back and look at, jet sweeps or speed sweeps or whatever people call them, the successful ones are generally when the sweeper's on the outside hip, just like an eye toss play. And the times that they're not as good as when they're on the inside hip. And so that's the first thing we really stress, is trying to get the sweeper's inside arm on the outside hip of the lead back, if you can kind of envision that.
Sure.
And
so
that puts him on the outside.
So that lead back is actually, if I'm the lead back, I'm going to step with, I guess, correct me if I'm wrong on this, I'm going to step with my inside foot kind of up into the line to make that J. Is that correct? Would my inside
foot be first? No, actually, you got to step with the outside foot at almost a 90 degree. I used to say 90 degrees, but now I'm saying, I don't want it straight to the sideline. I don't want it 45. I want it to be, I tell them 80 degrees, and they figure it out. But don't go right to the sideline with it. But I'm going to step with my outside foot or foot closer to the sideline, and then I'm going to take a second step, and then I'm going to take a third step, and that's my J, and then I start to attack whichever way I'm going.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Sure. And I was thinking more of the power J block a J step. Gotcha.
And so ours is a perimeter run play, and we want to get the sweeper on the outside hip. And then the second thing that we really stress with our guys is to have a plan as far as setting up the block. A lot of times the sweeper has time to see who's attacking the lead back. Sometimes it's a corner, sometimes it's a strong safety, however our perimeter blocking does it. But the key is to not cut it up until the lead back collides with the defender. So many times, and if you go back and watch again, jet sweeps or whatever people call them, the sweeper sees green and he cuts it up, and the back's still going, outside. Mm-hmm. And, the DB just comes in and makes a tackle, and it looks like the lead back doesn't know what he's doing. And really, the sweeper didn't set him up, didn't help him. And so we work real hard on don't make a move until the pads collide. So if you're going to go in and out, you got to wait for the back to hit. And that's hard for the kids. Or if you're going to, a lot of times teams are not going to let you get outside, so they just kind of feather towards the sideline, and you want to kick it. I tell them stretch it, and when the pads collide, then you cut it up. And a lot of times they cut it up too early because they see green grass, and I tell them it's fool's gold. You gotta be more patient. And so we drill that, we work that, and so I think the timing of the sweep, and then the position of the sweeper and the lead back, and then the don't make the cut until the pads collide. Those are probably the three best nuggets I can give you on that. Over the years, that's what I found has been the what I call the play, the play buster, is when they don't do those things. And some kids do it naturally, but most you have to drill them, and you have to set up drills for them to do that.
Now, your guys inside, again, remembering back to some of your teach tapes, your guys inside are, I guess the best way I could describe it would be modified stretch blocking, because you are, at least in your philosophy, you're able to leave some guys unblocked inside to get up to the second level. How much of that still holds true?
Absolutely. In fact, the more I do it, the more, you know, unless the defensive lineman's got it, like, you know, in high school, sometimes they put a wrestler, you know, number 37 at nose guard or D tackle, and the guy's quicker than a cat. You know, those guys we would have to block. But most of the time in college, you know, they've got three techniques, and one technique's a one technique, and that they're there for a reason. And, you know, they didn't sign up to run 30, 40 yards every play to make the tackle. Just like the corner didn't sign up to take on the lead blocker. And so I think anytime you can get guys, a part of our philosophy, just get guys in conflict, you know, they have to do things they don't want to do. And but most of the time, you know, if you time it properly, whether you're behind center in the gun, you really don't need to block the three technique, and you know, don't need to block the one technique. We will, you know, we try to we have I call it day one rule. You know, you got to teach the kids day one what to do. They want to know the rules, or, you know, what do I do on this play? And so we call it a track block. We're going to get everybody up and try to get everybody on the second level. If somebody gets on your track, a three technique or a one technique, you can cut them, or, you know, you block them, they're on your track. But there's a lot of times where the beauty of the play, and the reason I love it so much, is, you know, you can do whatever you want with the line. I mean, they're not making what I call a meaningful block. Now, in the red light, they do. In the red light, we will block the three technique. But there's a lot of ways, you know, there's a lot of ways to block them. You know, you can, a lot of times, they're, you know, you can down block with the guard, and that three technique steps down, and that's as good as blocking them. And so we really have a lot of ways of blocking the sweep based on what we think the defense wants to do technique wise. And we're going to try to make your technique wrong. And so our track blocking is what we teach day one. We do it, but I say if we ran 10 sweeps, we're going to track block maybe 5 times, and we'll do something else the other time. I mean, you could just man block it. You could have everybody go the opposite way. There's a lot of ways, depending on what the defense is doing. I mean, that's how a lot of teams are running it now, especially in the NFL. You know, they zone block left and fly sweep right. And, you know, it puts the defense in a real conflict.
Yeah, they see two plays going each direction is basically the key that they see. As far as, you know, you do see a lot of teams kind of dabble in this. I get they see that it's a good play. They see the value in the sweep, but maybe it's not their signature thing. You know, how much time do you feel it really takes to, number one, get the timing, and number two, understand all the intricacies to make this successful? I mean, is it something, you know, that you can make a living on, I guess, just going out there and practicing a few reps a day, or maybe doing a period of sweep timing to do that? You know, what's your philosophy on that?
That's a great question. You know, I've gone to camps, or I've worked with some teams where I never worked with the line. We just worked timing with the backs, and then we got together to the line, and I say, hey, you guys, can you trap a 5 technique? And they go, yeah, coach, we call it, you know, hillbilly special. Like, okay, you guys run hillbilly special, and we're going to run a green light sweep. And it looks perfect. I think the beauty of it is the line can do what they do. You know, they can be practicing other things during the mesh time. I don't think it takes that long to time the sweep. But I think, you know, we do it just about every drill though. I mean, we always have motion. We're always running a guy through there. And so our guys just get used to it. But I think, you know, 5 minutes a day of a mesh drill, it's a good warm up. You can get everybody running a little bit. You can kind of get a little circular pattern going where they go sweep to the left, and then they get in line and sweep to the right and keep going in a circle. I think that's the key. But I think the intricacies is teaching kids how to fake, and teaching kids how to, you know, I think that's where I think coaches don't put any time in. And that's really what makes the play go. And you see it all the time where somebody fakes a sweep and they give the ball in a trap or a ISO or a zone, whatever your offense is. And that thing pops because, the defense's eyes aren't disciplined enough to find the ball, that some teams are really disciplined and they just look at the line and then you can, have the line do something and the sweeper do something else. And that kind of defeats them. And so I just think you gotta be, you got to time it. It's just got to be, there's got to be a good timing of it. So the quarterback isn't spinning around early or waiting for the sweeper to get there, or in the shotgun, he's not holding the ball for, and the sweeper's got to take three or four more steps to get to him. That's where I see teams screwing it up. Their timing's just not crisp. And I don't think it takes a lot, but, you better put – it's a good warm-up drill. It's a good conditioning drill. Instead of lining up and running sprints, you could line them up and run timing drill, and you get the same effect. But I think the more you do that and the more you teach them about their eyes, what to look at when they fake, how to hold their arms when they fake, those are all things that I think are undercoached.
Definitely. And I remember a key one-liner. I don't know if you still use it from your video about faking. Do you still use that one-liner? See if you remember it.
Well, I said faking his character, and I also said, rock the baby. I got a yep. million of them. So
I believe it was a little history lesson about the, was it the French Foreign Legion?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Even a dead man can fake. Yeah, they just propped the dead guys up on the walls, and the Arabs turned around and left. And, I remember in high school, even here in college, there's a lot of times I'll just put the freshman sweeper in or freshman guy and say, hey, you just be a good faker. And they can be an All-American faker. They may be an awful player. They may not be able to catch. But if they have good technique, we have our guys, when they go through, act like they're getting a handoff and then they slide their hand that's away from the defense, we put it on our hip and we pump the other arm, which is how you look when you have the football on the sweep. If a guy goes 100 miles an hour, you can get a third string freshman or JV back in an all league safety running downhill full speed because he thinks you got the ball. And we really celebrate fakes. I mean, that's a big part of what we do. And we, in film, if we fake out the cameraman, I never get mad at the cameraman. I always praise our team. That's kind of just part of our culture. And you can fake a guy a lot further than you can block him. Our guys are really, hopefully they buy into that. And that's something that we really have to coach.
So, Coach, you've mentioned the timing of the sweep quite a bit. And I know from experience, it's a heck of a lot easier to do that from under center. But what would be, for our listeners, what would be just a couple key points in timing up that sweep, whether it's under center or shotgun?
Well, and again, to me, this is the secret sauce of the deal. When you're under center, for us, when we're under center, the quarterback times it. The sweeper is, he's not trying. You don't get any yards for going fast before the ball snapped. So we talk about building our speed so that we're just about full speed when we get to the what I call the mesh point. And we tell our quarterback, I used to overcoach it. We used to have cones out there and, arrows and, dots. And right now I tell the quarterback, hey, I want you to be 180 degrees behind the center, 1 yard deep. And you're going to hand the ball off. If you're standing there waiting, you're early. And if you're reaching, you're late. And I said, just time it so it's about at the inside leg of the tackle. But the better they get at it, they don't need that inside leg. They just kind of get a feel for it. And to me, that's been a lot more effective than trying to, make it, something that's really rigid. I kind of show them what I want, and then they got to figure out how to get that. So we give them the inside leg as a beginning thing, but they get the hang of it. I tell the sweeper, if the quarterback, don't slow down for the quarterback. If he misses his timing, you should run by thinking, man, Coach Beckman's going to yell at you because you really screwed that up. It's not my fault. And because what happens, and what I've learned, is the sweeper's trying to time it and the quarterback's trying to time it, and everybody gets real tentative and you lose the advantage of the speed. And I've done it with, we've had summer camps where I've done it with 8th grade quarterbacks. And, you know, believe me, if you just kind of show them what they want, they pick it up pretty quick. It's really not that hard. The other thing we do, our quarterback, when we first start teaching, he turns his head and looks right at the sweeper. And as they get better, they can use their peripheral vision. But we're not fooling anybody. And obviously, teams will try to time that, so we have to have different motions. And that's another topic. But so that's how we time it behind center. Where we really got good at the shotgun is when I got the quarterback out of it. I know you coach at academic schools. I was at an academic school. The quarterbacks were in a lab. I was playing quarterback. All I was doing was taking the shotgun snap, and the players were running plays, and I ran. And we just ran 10 yards down the field as a warm up. And what I found as a quarterback is it's really hard to catch the ball and look at the sweeper at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so I said, we're going to just jettison the shotgun. And of course, the kids at Willamette were pretty smart. And the sweeper said, "Coach, I can see the ball." And I remember saying, "Well, I can see it too. What's the point?" And he had a great point. He could time it. He could speed up or slow down based on the ball being snapped. And that's really what revolutionized, in my mind, the sweep and the shotgun. So we don't have the quarterback. All he does is he kind of gives the hut at about the tackle or whatever your snap count is, but his eyes are locked on the football because sometimes it's high and right or it's low and left, and you can't be looking at the sweeper and the ball. And our job is to catch the ball, and we call it present it. Just put the ball right in front of you, and it's a sweeper's job to get to the football at right when it hits his hands. Mm-hmm. And so we call it boom boom. And so I stand there and I go boom boom, and that's a good sweep. And if I boom boom, that's not good. And there's a million ways we could do it. I just like boom boom. But it's as fast as I can say it. It's as fast as the time that it should be. And I've had the ball on the ground where the quarterback just picks it up and puts it right in front of him, and in front of his head. And we've had good plays. And so I got tired. I watch a lot of spread teams, and they might lose 5 to 7 plays a game because a snap is bad. And I didn't want to do that because of the timing component.
Sure.
And so that is really, to me, those are really important points that I just made right there. If you want to be a good sweep team.
Well, I think you bring up a key point, and it's something I've learned as a coach as well, is that sometimes your players have the best answers for you. We rely on that. We go out there and we have a plan to teach it, and they say, "Coach, well, what about this?" And, it's kind of like you said, it's revolutionary that, "Oh, wow, I didn't think of it that way. That works. Let's do it."
That's kind of how I came up with the green light sweep. I for 4 or 5 years, I always ran the sweep to a tight end because that's how I learned it. And we had an injury, and we told the tight end to go in, and he thought he was late, so he lined up split. And I'm yelling at him, "You got to be tight." And we run the sweep, and I remember that our defensive coordinator looked at me and goes, "Man, that got there fast." And I went, "We may have to put that in." And that really taught me a lesson. And so kids make mistakes, somebody pulls the wrong way. And I'm always going, "Hey, there's two things happen. One, I might put that in as a play. That might be good. And two, there's some anal retentive defensive coordinator drawing that up and making a card, and he's going to practice that. So, so don't worry too much about it. Obviously we'll fix it, but a lot of our mistakes have become plays. And that's really how I developed it. For example, we used to always fake the sweep, fake a belly, and give on the counter, so you got a little cross flow. And, one day we gave it to the belly guy and didn't fake to the counter. I never thought of that, and it worked, and I'm going, "Okay, well, that's in." And, all the different motions we came up with. So it has been a collaboration of a lot of really neat kids over the years saying, "Hey, Coach Beckman, how you ever think about this?" Or some knucklehead making a mistake. And, you go, "Wait, we can work with that." And, that's really – because I had I played linebacker, and I was a defensive coach early in my career. So I kind of knew what screwed up defenses because I'd seen it. But I had no idea what to do on offense. And so I just always tried to, you know, early on, just screw the defense up and mess with their reads or mess with their timing, or, you know, the fly kind of messes with defenses.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, thinking of your philosophy, you know, you're going to run the sweep and then you're going to run the sweep. What right. tendencies are you looking for? I would assert that it's always easier to find tendencies when you have a starting point play. You know, some people say it's a base play and they have all these base plays, but really it's a starting point. So how do you look for tendencies based on, okay, here's how they're defending the sweep?
Well, it's a great question. And again, that's something that's, you know, really evolved over the years. But when we game plan, we want to see, to me, what makes sense, you know, and again, really football has to make sense to you as a coach. I mean, everybody has a different filter. If you played quarterback, you have a different filter than if you played offensive line. And if you're, you know, if you coach DBs, you have a different filter than if you coach D-line. You know, everybody's got a different filter they look at. And to me, the sweep, it was a filter that made me feel comfortable as a play caller. Because a lot of times you're just rolling the dice, you know. You might as well be playing, fantasy football.
Right.
So for me, I want to see, how do you line up to just our tight end set, to a three-man edge? Then I want to see, how do you line up to just one wide receiver? Then I want to see, how do you line up to a tight end and a wing, or a tight end and a wide receiver? And then I want to see, how do you line up to two wide receivers? And then I want to see, how do you line up to a tight end and two wide receivers, an unbalanced? Then I want to see, how do you line up to three wide receivers? And, you know, that sounds a lot more complicated than it is. And we don't always have, I call them edges. There's six edges in football, and maybe more, but that's the six we have. And you know, we just kind of query, how do you line up against those? And then we kind of say, well, which way would be the best way to run the sweep? And would yellow be good here? No, it's out. You know, or would red be good here? Yeah, it's a good look. And would green be good? Yeah, that's a good look. And so we kind of work our, that's kind of how we start our game plan, is starting how, what's our best ways of running the sweep? And then the second thing is, you know, we're looking for rotation. You know, we got, you know, if you're a three deep team, you got probably six ways you can rotate. And if you're a four deep team, you probably got about nine ways you can rotate. And we have terms for all the different rotations. So knowing how you rotate really is going to dictate, or not rotate, dictates, you know, where we think we can attack based on the edge. And then the third thing would be, you know, what are you doing with your linebackers away from the sweep? You know, are they flowing with the sweep? Are they sitting waiting for a counter? Or, you know, so every defensive coach has a different philosophy. And so, I mean, in the simplest terms, that's pretty much how we use the sweep to set up all our inside run and our passing game.
Got it. Now, I think that's a very interesting way of looking at it, how you explain, you know, you're looking at the six different edges, you're looking at the I think you said nine rotations, you're looking at the way mm-hmm. the linebackers are working away from the sweep. Are those things you set up and systematize for your coaches and players as far as a set of terminology so that you guys can communicate easily?
Absolutely. You know, and I heard a great talk once about, you know, what's important in your culture has a lot of words. You know, you think about our culture, there's a lot of words for money, you know, a lot of terms, a lot of terms for sex. I mean, things that are, you know, there's a lot of terms. And somebody said, you know, in the Eskimo culture, they have a lot of terms for snow because, you know, they have soft snow, icy snow, you know, slushy snow, thick snow. And that just struck me that we need a lot of words because rotations are really important. So you come in. So we really teach our kids a bunch of terms of all the rotations we've seen. And a lot of them have names of teams that did it to us first. Like there's a Chapman rotation because Chapman University did something to us that I'd never seen before. And, you know, so, I mean, it's, you know, we haven't played Chapman in 15 years, but it's still the Chapman rotation. And, but we just, you know, you can call it whatever you want, but in our playbook, our coaches and players know what those terms mean. And if there's no rotation, we have a term for that too. And so, yeah, that's just part of it. That's really important to it. Just like, you know, there's, I'm sure, you know, every offense and defense has terms that are really important to them, but you know, the backside linebackers, what they're doing, the rotation or lack of rotation, and you know, and then the edges are really important to us. And then most teams, you know, they're going to do something to the sweep side. So, mm-hmm. you know, they're either going to get upfield and try to stop it, or they're going to try to read it, or, you know, everybody. So we're going to find out, what's your plan to the sweep? I mean, with the force player, you know, are you going to get upfield and try to short circuit us before we get started? Are you going to, you know, feather us? And so those are the things that we're looking for.
Do you assign coaches to look for those specific things? So do you send a guy, for example, to rotation, somebody to the edge, somebody to the linebackers, et cetera?
Yeah, we do. You know, in high school, you know, we get I get my younger coaches or freshman coaches up there. You know, we don't quite have as big a staff in Division III, so we try to do a lot of that before. So usually we go into a game based on, you know, very rarely do we, you know, I've played teams like we've had three or four films and not one team's gone in motion against them. So I'm going, I have no idea they're going to do with motion. But usually you get 6 or 7, 10, 20 plays with motion. And so we got to study what's the defensive structure? How do you handle that? And, you know, we make a best guess. And then usually I'm trying, if we don't have somebody looking, I usually have somebody, you know, trying to watch the backside linebackers. I usually have, you know, the receiver coach is going to watch rotation. But usually we have I'm just asking, are they doing what we thought they were going to do? And if it's yes, we're good to go. And if it's no, then, you know, we'll get the whiteboard out and draw it up and then, you know, adjust from there.
All right, Coach, we're going to put you in a situation here. We know that your base play is the sweep, but the situation is this. Time's running out. There's under 30 seconds to go. Ball's on the plus 30 going in, and we need a touchdown. It's third down and 7. So potentially we have, you know, two downs to pick up a first down, but that clock's running. What's going to be your call in this situation?
Well, I think we probably would have a sweeper going and fake it and see if, you know, if again, depending on what we thought your rotation was doing, let's just say you're rotating your safety down and you're putting the other safety in the middle of the field. Mm-hmm. And we would probably try to have the quarterback have a throw the ball to one-on-one to that receiver that's manned up with the corner. And we would probably flare a back out if they blitzed, and we try to just work that combination away from the sweep. It would probably be, you know, would be one of the things that we would do in that situation. That's been a money play for us.
Sure.
Now, if you don't rotate, you know, you're going to read, we would probably call something different then. In fact, we might even sweep if you didn't rotate because we think we got the numbers.
Speaking of the sweeping, how much of your offense includes that sweep motion? How, you know, a percentage of, okay, we're running, you know, for example, 70 plays in a game, how many of them are going to include a sweep motion?
That's a great question. I would say, you know, and every year it varies a little bit depending on your ability of your sweepers and you know, where your feature players are. I mean, this year our running, our quarterbacks were our most productive runners. And so, you know, it just changes from year to year. But I would say that if there's 70 plays, we're probably going to do 15 without any motion. And we're going to probably do, 55. We're probably going to do 40 with fly motion. And we'll probably do 15 with some spin, some alternate motion, you know, where you bring them across and bring them back and do the mesh, or bring them all the way across and just hope that they jump off sides, or short motion or return motion. So that, you know, that would be pretty much how we do. In fact, in our offense, our guys go in motion every play unless we tell them not to. And we just have certain ways to tell them not to. Could be snap count, or it could be I tell them to do a different motion. Otherwise, it's fly motion. So we're, you know, that pretty quite a bit, you know, and some teams will try to time it, which is fine. You know, we have an answer to that. And, but I just think motion from a defensive side, just it just bugs people, you know, and especially if you have more than one type of motion. I'm not a big fan of having like an orbit motion and a fly series, because to me, it's as a defensive coach, it's always a little easier to scout guys and coach guys or coach the defense up when they had different motions, because, you know, half their plays were out. But most of our motions look like it could be the sweep, or, you know, if it's not the sweep, like we just go all the way across. They only got like a split second to figure that out.
Right. Right. So motion, though, is a big part of your offense. Now, have you incorporated that into up-tempo at all, or do you guys huddle? What's your procedure?
Well, you know, at Lawrence, we're really in a rebuilding phase, and so our defensive coaches want us to take the full measure of time. And so we are a no-huddle team, but we take our time at the line of scrimmage. But we have gone up tempo, and I think I think with the fly offense, it's a tremendous advantage to go fast. And you know, when I was at Willamette and I really felt like we were overmatched, I'd have a fullback, a lead back, and a sweeper would be in the game. Then there'd be a lead back and a sweeper right next to me, and then there'd be another lead back and sweeper right next to me, and we went as fast as we could, and it was like every two plays a new sweeper and a new lead back went in, because those guys were doing the most running. And we just line up in a predetermined formation, and we, you know, had wrist cards, and we just went as fast as we could. And after a while, those D linemen, they're not as good at rushing the passer, because they're tired of running after the sweeper. Or, you know, we had our whole offense. We could run, you know, we could fake the sweep and run inside. But we've done that to great effect when we had more numbers, and obviously we had a little bit more talented football team. But you know, sometimes it's in your best interest to go fast as a team, and sometimes it's in your best interest to slow it down. And I think sometimes people go fast, and that's where you're seeing the scores being 76-61, because maybe their defense isn't that good.
Right.
So sometimes I think you just got to think about that.
So the other thing besides tempo that gets everybody's ears perked up, both on offense and defense, is RPO. Have RPOs made their way into this offense?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, zone reads made the way in. Again, I think it kind of is dependent on what kind of quarterback you have. But we'll still fake the sweep and run the outside zone and then run a bubble screen on the outside. You know, so maybe we start in trips 3-by-1 and bring the motion to the one side and option, and then the quarterback, and it's an option that, you know, if they take the dive away, he's got the option to run it or throw the pass, which I like a lot better than pitching the ball, because, you know, to me that takes a lot of practice, and we're already pretty good at the bubble screen. And so a lot of times we'll do an RP, you know, we'll do so the popular RPOs of, you know, optioning somebody and then, you know, the quarterback keeping it or throwing it has been really effective for us based off of our sweep. And then a lot of times we'll just say, hey, do this play or that play. So, for example, we might say, hey, we're going to run a sweep or we're going to throw a slant. And, you know, if they run with the sweeper, then we throw the slant. If they don't run with the sweeper, we hand the ball off. And so, you know, any of those type of, you know, either or things that are easy for the to have an easy cue for the quarterback has been really effective for us. And but that, again, that's one of the things I love about the offense, is that, you know, I'll be at a clinic and somebody's talking about zone read and they're doing it from a, you know, a 2-by-2 or a 3-by-1 or whatever. And I'm always drawing it up with a motion guy going through and trying to see how that fits, because, you know, if you got a fly sweep and then you got zone read the other way, I mean, that puts a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on there, and it looks like there's a lot of moving parts, but again, we practice it every day, and so our kids are yawning. It's just not that big a deal to them.
Well, it certainly seems like that sweep can enhance some of those things too, where you're able to see, if you're just standing there static, let's put it this way, if you're standing static and you're trying to read someone, they have some time to react, and you're going to have to stay on that read a little bit longer. But now when you, just like you said, you see that guy moving with the sweep motion, they're almost declaring what's going to happen for you pre-snap. So your RPOs maybe get cleaned up a little bit even, where he's able to see that right away and get the ball out.
Absolutely, especially teams that want to spin their secondary, because they've already declared they got to get down. And, you know, so, I mean, as many ways as you can run a midline option or a zone read away from the sweep, or a zone read to the sweep. So, you know, we'll have the sweeper, you know, we'll do a zone read with the sweeper to the same side the sweeper's going, and he becomes the second receiver. And that's been real effective for us. And so, you know, it's kind of a, you know, if you rotate, we'll usually try to take advantage of that. If you don't rotate, we're going to try to take advantage of that. And by, you know, so we can either outnumber you, or, you know, you can move people for us. It doesn't, you know, again, it's the same stuff to us. We just have to be, clever enough to figure out, you know, to have a plan for that.
Sure.
Of course, it sounds like we're scoring 200 points a game. That's the greatest thing since sliced bread. You know, and so, you know, we certainly aren't an offensive juggernaut at Lawrence by any stretch of the imagination. But I do think, you know, whenever I've been in a situation where we've had a rebuilding process, I just always felt like our offense gave us a chance to compete a little faster, because people were, you know, a little out of position. They always weren't. You can't simulate it as well in practice. And so as a result, you know, the first time they see it, it's really at game time.
Right, right.
This segment of the show is sponsored by Safe Football. Get the safest and most effective techniques for line play and contact in general from former NFL player and technique expert Scott Peters. Enter the code COACHESEDGE, all lowercase, no spaces, and get 40% off your subscription at safefootball.org.
Coach, I got a few more questions here. It's kind of a up-tempo drill of our own here. Some questions on various topics. So we'll shoot through these real quick. What's a mistake you made as a young coach? What did you learn from it?
I got really angry when coaches left. Like, I took it real personally, and didn't realize that they had lives and families, and maybe it was in their best interest. And so I learned to be way more gracious and helpful than I was when I was young.
What's the best piece of coaching advice you received?
Best piece of coaching advice I ever received was a coach told me, "Hey, Speckman, you get what you get. You know, you don't complain." Anyway, saying, "Don't complain about the players. Don't complain about your size. Don't complain about your speed. Just win with them."
What's a book you'd recommend to our listeners?
I really like Season of Life. Another one is When the Game Stands Tall, about De La Salle football. I forget who wrote Season of Life. I was going to look that up, and I forgot.
Was Joe Ehrman involved in that one?
Joe Ehrman wrote Season of Life.
Okay.
Excellent read.
What's your favorite piece of coaching technology, or maybe a piece you've seen that you'd like to bring into your workflow?
I don't know if I've... I mean, I'm pretty happy with the video, and I mean, I really, you know, again, I'm not trying to plug your product, but I really like Coach's Edge. You know, we just haven't pulled the trigger on it yet, but I think anything that you can do with film is way better than writing it down. And and I think some kids need it written. So we really still use, hey, we're going to walk it, we're going to chalk it, we're going to watch it, and then we're going to go out and do it. And but you know, anything that enhances any of those three, I think is something you got to jump on.
What's something you've taken from a coaching clinic and implemented in what you're doing? Well, we talked about that, didn't you? You had the red light, green light, yellow light.
Yeah, the whole thing of how to number in the perimeter. Most of the passing game I've used. Just a lot of team building things. You know, I speak at a lot of clinics, and I love doing it. But I see a lot of speakers; they just leave. I mean, I'm thinking I got a whole weekend I could sit here, so usually I'm in the back, you know, taking notes, and I've learned a lot of stuff at clinics. I really enjoyed them.
Coach, what major concerns do you have for the future of our game right now? Maybe some ideas that that solve those problems?
That's a great question. I think we got to be preaching all the time, every time we get a chance, anytime anybody asks us how that football's an important game. You know, I played it, you played it, you know, it's a tremendous, you know, young men need a vision quest. They need something to prove their manhood. We don't really have that in our country. And then safety is an illusion, you know. So, I got tired of parents saying, you know, I don't want my kid to play football and they buy him a car. Or, you know, I don't want my kid to play football and he's riding a skateboard. I mean, you know, kids get hurt doing all kinds of things. So I really think we need to really speak up about football and its importance. But I also think that, you know, going out and hitting for 3 hours is pretty, I think you only got so many hits in your body. It's a finite number. And you probably want to save them for Friday night, or you want to save them for Saturday. And so I think really coaches need to really study how to practice in shorts. I think coaches really need to learn how to have really effective drills where there's not full contact. And there's lots of them out there. There's lots of really good teachers. I think the best is Bill Williams, who has a Football Coaches Growth Association. I can't even say what it is, but just Google him. But he teaches everything from shorts to pads. And I think that's where you're going to, you know, I think hawk tackling is really huge. Mm-hmm. Equipment is really huge. But, you know, I think, you know, I mean, most people aren't hitting like they used to do in practice all the time. And I think you have to really teach kids how to practice in, you know, like I said, in half pack, in shorts, and they don't have to go live all the time. So I think that's two things that, you know, coaches can do.
Sure. Coach, last question. What advice would you give a young coach looking to make it in this profession?
I think just have fun where you're at. I think, you know, we're almost trained to be unhappy as coaches because we want to be at that next level. You know, you want to be at the high school that's got over 1,000 kids, and you want to be at high school over 1,500 kids, and you want to get into college, and, you know, at the top of the pyramid, there's some obscene amounts of money being made, but, you know, I would think even those guys that are making the big bucks are, you know, they still kind of dig at coaching football. And I just think that, you know, somebody told me once, hey, just act like the job you have is the last job you're ever going to have. And that's something I've tried to do. Most of the jobs I've ever gotten were because I wasn't looking and came to me and I coach against Frosty Westering at Pacific Lutheran, who was a great coach, and he had a saying, make the big time where you're at. And, you know, whether it's a high school JV game and there's a minute left in the game and you got to score a touchdown from the 5-yard line, or you're a Division III, or you're in the Superdome, every coach's butt's tight. You know, everybody's excited. And football's football. And, you know, just become a master at your craft. You know, too many guys are not studying it enough to really be masters at their craft. And just enjoy where you're at, get better at it, and then keep your eyes and ears open with your network, because most of the jobs you're going to get are going to be because of people you know. And network as much as you can.
Coach, I want to thank you for that advice. I want to thank you for being on the show. It's certainly been my pleasure. I really enjoyed talking ball with you today.
Well, I appreciate it, Keith. And I really, you know, and it's an honor to be with all these great speakers. Thanks for asking me. And hopefully I've added a little bit to the many great, great ideas that you're going to hear this year. So appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.